Thanks for joining me on the Boise Art Scene Podcast. My name's Morgan McCullum. I'm here with Misty Monster, here to talk a little bit about your work and what gets you creating. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. I'm super excited. I'm a big fan.
Well, no, that's great to hear. I'm always grateful to hear that, you know, somebody's consuming the content that I'm creating.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm listening. Now that you do the podcast, I'm listening as well. Before, it was the videos, which made me jealous. I was like, oh, I want one of those. But I'm super excited for this.
Yeah, unfortunately, those are just, I mean, I would love to get back into them. It's just the amount of work that they...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
If I can get a sponsorship that pays me to, you know, take the time to create that stuff, I would love to get back into creating the videos. But yeah, the time commitment, even for just a five minute video,
yeah,
is a lot.
Oh no, I totally, you sponsors, you and me both.
But yeah, that's the goal. If I can get enough money to make it to where I can afford to do it, you know,
right.
I'm not. Anyway, let's talk about you here. Can you tell me what your primary medium is?
I paint in acrylics on canvas. That's pretty much it. I like how fast they dry. I like the speed. I like that if I mess up, I can cover it up pretty easily and get on with my life. But I love how acrylics look, but they are just, I have a small apartment. They're slow. They smell.
So when you're done with the work, what do you do with them? I mean, the piece that I see currently in your studio here is a very large work. And the art that I see on the walls here are obviously prints of other pieces. What do you do with your completed pieces?
So to explain what's happening in this space, I am currently working on finishing a 78 paintings for a tarot deck called The Morbidly Adorable Tarot.
Okay.
And it's going to be published by US Games. And I have two paintings left. And so what I did is I painted 77 of the 78 in 16 by 20. And then what I would do is I would turn them into a print and I'd post them on the wall as I got done so I could see my progress. What do I have left? Where am I going with this? And for some reason, the 78th painting, I decided to make 5 foot by 4 foot as a showpiece. So it's kind of like the final boss. I'm trying to like pass this level right now. Like, let me finish this painting. So yeah, that's what you see. So all the work on the wall is, you know, they are prints to make them smaller since the other ones are so much bigger. And then I painted them all on sheets of canvas because I thought, oh, well, then I won't have 78, you know, wrapped canvases.
Oh, instead of stretch canvases.
Yeah, okay. I was like, oh, that's going to take up so much space, right? So what I did is I just thought, oh, I'll just do sheets of canvas and I'll have a stack of paintings. And that's what I kind of did. Now I'm kicking myself. Now that I'm coming to the gallery portion where I want to show all the paintings together,
oh, yeah.
I'm like, oh, I have to get these all framed. And framing... Sponsors.
Framing is very expensive.
Is expensive.
Yes.
78 at once. Yeah, it's insane how much. Like, I didn't think that far ahead when I did them. And I'm like, oh man, if I had done gallery wrap, you know, stretch canvases, I'd be done. Mm. I'd be home. So.
I'm not a painter myself. Mm-hmm. So I've never actually seen the process of painting on a unstretched canvas.
Yeah.
Do you put it on a backing board or something? How does that work?
So this little table you see in front of you with paint all over it, I can just lay them flat and paint, like almost if you were drawing just on a table or something. Like I can just pull it forward and paint at the top, move it back. And because it dries so fast, you know, I do have paint all over me to a degree,
sure.
But yeah, I can just do it flat on a table. And I actually prefer painting that way. I'm finding it very difficult to do this 5 foot by 4 foot on an easel because I'm not used to painting with it in my face. I'm used to leaning over it and painting more.
Sure.
So yeah, definitely a different feeling. Yeah.
One of my computer monitors is an old Wacom that I found at thrift store, you know.
Yeah.
I love the Reuseum in Garden City. They're awesome. But I've got it on an adjustable arm so I can like pull it down into my face if I'm going to like Photoshop something and really try to get in on the details. But yeah, I having an immovable, more immovable is...
But you like doing it in front of...
I like it to be right in my face. And I'm so used to working on I work on screens mostly. Yeah. So they are vertical surfaces, you know, and whether that's in Photoshop or video or whatever, it's... I tend to work more right in my face.
Yeah, more vertical.
But I always... Part of what I love about doing this is getting to see how different people do different things. And you are certainly not the first painter who has painted on a horizontal
table, essentially,
surface.
Yeah. When I first started, I didn't even have this little thing that's so old. People tried to get me to replace it. And I'm like, why? It's fine. But I first started out, I would just kneel on the floor and paint on something because I had no table for it. And it wasn't like a poor, you know, like, oh, I'm so poor. Right. It was just, I didn't know where to begin.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, let me just paint on, you know, lay something on the floor and paint on the floor. And that's how my niece and my nephew started too. When I would give them art supplies, they'd just be hovered over it on the floor, you know?
Yeah. There's a ceramics artist I interviewed, couple years ago now, Lala's Fresh Pots. Kayla Morgan is her name, and she started throwing in her bathroom because she could contain
the mess.
And then through, I believe it was Alexa Rose, she got enough money that she was able to start in a space. And she's over at Spaceport in Garden City, that area. She's in a space that's got two or three other ceramics artists.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah. I know she's got work at Idaho Made downtown, which is a neat place. Have you been in that one?
I don't think so. No. I love learning about new places, though.
Yeah, it's in a really cool building.
Yeah.
And they've got a lot of Idaho Made
artists. Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah. It seems like they have artists who work the counter, and it's also.
Is it a co-op kind of?
I'm not positive.
Oh, okay.
It might very well be. That would kind of make sense. But
yeah,
Made in Idaho. It's a really neat little store. And like I said, it's a really neat little building. In the basement, they've got a train club. My grandpa was into trains.
Nice.
So all sorts of little neat
stuff.
The
Idaho history. Yeah, I love it.
I mean, and why I do this podcast, what got me interested in this podcast was all that stuff that's here that you don't know about because... Nobody's talking about it.
Right.
You know, if you know, you know. But if you don't know, you don't know.
Right.
What a sentence.
How are people going to know if you don't tell them? That's a Dolly Partonism.
Oh, there you go. I love Dolly. Yeah. What got you into creating art?
So I took a different path. A lot of people I've noticed that are artists are like, oh, I've been doing it my whole life. Or, you know, I've had a pencil in my hand since I was 5. I remember watching my aunt and my mom draw, you know, just casually doodling or whatever. And I remember thinking, that is amazing. Keep drawing. Like, I wanted to watch them draw, right? And I think there was always something in me like, well, I'm not naturally doing it, so I must not draw, right? And then I noticed a progression where I think what started? I got an ElfQuest comic. And I know that's a real obscure thing where people that love it, like we're cult fans, you know, but I got into ElfQuest and I love the world building so much. I mean, I was like, I want to live with these elves. I want, you know, this life. And the art was just, Wendy Pini is such an amazing artist. There was a part of me that was like, could I do this? You know, like, can I do so? And then I ignored it for a while. And then weirdly, I went to college and I was going to be a veterinarian. And I started learning that, you know, people that were doing it weren't so happy with it. You know, I just started learning things I didn't want to know, right?
Sure.
It
I mean,
starts
you learn
to
the
fall
reality.
Apart a little bit. Yeah. So when I was there, I was like, well, I'm here. And I got into a cultural anthropology class. And I was like, oh, I love this. And I'm like, you know what I love? I love art, too. So I pretty much knew I was just going to college to do what I was interested in and not come out with a real career. So here I was in college, people had been drawing their whole lives, you know, showing up and doing these beautiful pieces, and I was just learning. And
sure,
I started like way behind, but it also made me more open to doing the projects. a lot of people would be like, oh, I don't want to do this project. This is dumb. Or I don't want to do nude models. Or I don't just, and I'm like, I do not care. Put it in front of me. I don't care how bad I am. Like I'm doing something. And I don't think it taught me how to do art, but it exposed me to sculpture and ceramics, and it let me do a 101 in a lot of things.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's one of the things that I took a drawing class, mm-hmm. and I've always been the person that says, I can't draw stick figures, you know?
Yeah.
And the teacher made a comment about that. He's like, you know, people don't, he's like, I always hear people say, I can't even draw stick figures.
Right.
And he's like, you know, everybody can draw. He's like, it's mm-hmm. not a, I mean, there is talent that can sure. be had from it, but nobody just innately can draw. They have to
yes.
do it over and over again. They have yeah. to practice. They have to learn techniques. And some people might be able to innately figure it out, but
better, yeah.
But yeah. yeah, everybody has to practice to mm-hmm. get good. And by the end of it, you know, I had a drawing that shading was the focus mm-hmm. of it. It was a pencil drawing class,
yeah.
you know. But by the end of it, my final project, it looks good, you know,
yeah, right.
parts of it don't, but you know, the shading is really neat.
But that's just you starting out. Like imagine, like if it were your passion,
yeah.
you know, where you would be, because my stuff didn't start out like this. It was terrible, you well, know, like it just, the old ones, I'm like, oh, I did that. But I, you know, you start somewhere.
My early interviews, mm-hmm. You know, the lighting's bad,
oh.
the microphones, the sound's
yeah.
bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to make bad stuff before you make good stuff.
Right, and absolutely.
That's kind of become a recurring theme in these mm-hmm. podcasts. But yeah, I mean, you have to start. You got to have those mistakes. I like to say, and again, recurring theme on this mm-hmm. podcast, everything I know I've learned from messing something up. I know a lot about computers because I've broken a lot of computers in a lot of dumb mm-hmm. ways. But I learned how to fix them.
No,
and that's...
I get that. I've painted over things a lot where that arm doesn't look right, the eye doesn't look right. Like, I mean, I don't know, you know, how they show the old masters where they could see the layers
yes.
where they painted over something. I'm like, oh, I completely identify with that.
That
you
is
know?
100% in, mm-hmm. in my conversation with Danny Avery. Mm-hmm. He brought up how his paintings sometimes have layers, and he was showing me one of his pieces. He talked to me about how he doesn't always like to live with his pieces up, you know? I mean, he likes having them there. He loves having that space, mm-hmm. but he doesn't like to keep them around too long because he'll look at it and be like, oh, I want to adjust that a little bit,
yeah.
you know? And you yeah. start, so I believe he had told me that like the Doc Brown one that he's got there from Back to the Future, mm-hmm. he has, since it's been hanging, he's added some like accents with like lightning
yeah.
bolts, and I think he said he redid the face or
mm-hmm.
something. So it's
as your skill grows, you're like, what could I do now that I couldn't do before? Yeah.
And I'm guilty of it living in the digital world where mm-hmm. I can undo and redo and, you know, see how different things look.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, at some point you gotta just accept it's done,
it's
and
fine.
Go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I 100% completely understand redoing and being mm-hmm. like, oh, that could take a little bit of adjustment there.
I started out with selling on eBay.
Mm.
Like there was a whole eBay scene for artists.
I did see hear about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I would say it was more like, oh, I don't know, 2006, 7, 8 or whatever, before algorithms changed and squashed everybody that was small and didn't pay. But they were gone so fast. I would paint them, they were gone. So I didn't have time to really go, oh, I could have done that better. I
oh,
know
sure.
I could.
Yeah.
But yeah, they just moved on. And with the tarot, yes, I've been holding to this set for a long time. But there's very few. There are a couple. I am going to go back and fix something
mm-hmm.
because it doesn't look the same quality maybe.
Sure.
But overall, I think eBay taught me to let it go pretty quickly. So
yeah, I think that was something that's especially a long-term project
mm-hmm.
like this, or a longer-term project.
Right.
It's important to see, because if you're doing 78 paintings,
mm-hmm.
by the end of that, you're going to have skills on number 78 that you
right.
didn't have on number one.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense that maybe you go back and start revising some
There's
of the
early
ones.
There's a couple that need a little help. Yeah.
You know, it, and that makes 100% complete sense. What motivates you to create your art? You've talked about this is this current series is based on or creating a tarot deck. But what is creating or giving you the inspiration for the different designs that you're doing on the cards, or just, I guess, what in general kind of gives you your...
Well, love of art. I do a lot of music-inspired things. Like you wouldn't know it just looking, because it's not obvious. Sometimes songs, lyrics from songs inspire. I do a lot of skeletons because, well, A, Halloween. I love Halloween so much. Like, like, why couldn't it be my birthday? But also, I really got into Day of the Dead culture, too, from, you know, where they talk about the three deaths that a person experiences. You know, one's like the loss of your breath when you actually physically die. Then there's the, like, decaying of your body. But then there's also the keeping the memory of your loved ones alive. Yeah. And I know that, you know, Coco really helped with, you know, bringing that to a bigger, you know, like kids and stuff like that, which I love that. It's so good, right? But I really was like painting skeletons a lot, and people started requesting them for, you know, like, oh, somebody passed away. Could you do like a tombstone with, you know, their dates and stuff? And I just felt like it was a little way to commemorate things, you know, or I would paint somebody's, like, they wanted me to do a skelly of their pet, you know, like, oh, my iguana passed away. Could you do like a skeleton version of him, you know, eating dandelions, right? Like things like that. So it kind of snowballed. It was just something I loved. But then people were like, no, I want to commemorate that way too. You know, like I recently posted, someone got a tattoo. That's a whole other world that blows my mind. Like, people tattoo my art, what? But, you know, of their horse, you know, but in a skeleton version. Oh, and so I was like posting that, and it was really kind of neat. Dreams. Some of these paintings came from dreams where I even want to paint something, and then I'll have a dream about it. And I'm like, I feel like the dream was like, no, you have to do what I said. I know it's really wild, but it always works out somehow. So a lot of symbolism, fairy tales, you know, I'm really into a lot of, like, you know, animal mythology or things like that. So I kept this tarot in line with, there's kind of a baseline tarot that most people reference, and it's like the Rider-Waite-Smith tarot. You know, it's kind of the most well-known one. And you can see some points where you're like, oh, yeah, that does follow. It helps people know what they're looking at.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've remade some of them so completely, you probably wouldn't know, just because I don't identify with something from, you know, 100 years ago or whatever. Sure. Sometimes.
Well, but I mean, it wouldn't be much point in just remaking
redoing
the
it.
Old one.
Yeah, yeah, because it was done so well, and there's been so many people that have done such a great job that I was just like, yeah, this was just wild to me. This was something that came out of, I thought a tarot deck would be fun, but it was just a thought. And then I actually was at an event where I was trying to get licensors to license my art for like sculptures and stuff, which I did. I had them for, you know, several years, things like that. And a tarot deck company was there and said, hey, have you thought about making a tarot deck? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Sounds like a great idea, right? And honestly, 15 years later, like,
well,
I've been
really
working
cool
on this forever.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really awesome, like, one of the artists who I interviewed, his handle was Intricuts, and he will cut up cards based on the backings or the art that's on them, and it comes out really, really interesting, really neat looking. But there's so much, there's a big market, I think, for cards of all varieties, whether it's playing cards, tarot cards, you know, all of it. I mean, I've got magic cards from 20 something years ago still, because I don't know, there's something about cards, you know.
Well, and you're holding like a mini thing of art too, right? Like, besides the fact that there's a purpose for them, some people just literally collect these because they're like, I have a stack of 78 little paintings, like, how neat is that? I can just collect art that way. So yeah, I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice. Not everybody has or wants, you know, a big display area for art. And it's nice to have things that you can have that are consumable like that, where it's like, oh, well, it's small, it's compact,
right.
But I get to show off all these, this variety from this artist that I mm-hmm. love, especially in this case where you've got one artist creating right. 78 yeah. different works that mm-hmm. are all going to be in a deck. That's, mm-hmm. that's really cool. Like you said, it's like a little book. It's just a different format oh, yeah. of getting, yeah. getting those out there. And you get something that you can use or, you know, put on a shelf either way.
Right. It's funny too, just what you said about the whole, them not, and not going out of style, I guess. I have talked to my publisher over the years and been like, are you sure you don't want to cancel your contract with me? This is taking forever. And first they're like, well, we get it. You're an artist. We're glad that you're still doing it. But they're like, tarot decks never go out of style. So mm-hmm. we'll still be here to publish it whenever you get done. Right. So I take that for granted sometimes, you know, sure. that the popularity is not going to die. Right. Like there'll still be a company.
But. Yeah. Well, I mean, whether it's just somebody that's curious and mm-hmm. wants to buy a deck and they think that this one looks nice, you know,
right.
or somebody that is a collector like that Intricuts, he doesn't cut every deck that he buys, mm-hmm. you know, he's a collector. So mm-hmm. he's got a display case that has
that he loves.
Some, yeah,
oh,
like special
cool.
decks,
yeah.
you know,
oh, that's
so
cool.
it's. I totally, you know, there's
he's
all
a fan
sorts.
As well.
And he sends them like all over the world. Like,
yeah.
because, and like I said, those are playing cards, but even, mm-hmm. but tarot's got a worldwide appeal just mm-hmm. the same. You know, it's, there's people all over the world
yeah.
that are interested in these things and collect these things because they like having a variety. There's somebody out there who has 100 tarot decks
oh,
just because
sure.
they like
yeah.
the art on
uh-huh.
each one. So that does remind me, though, as we were talking, can I have you tell me a little bit about how people can see your work, like your
okay.
Instagram, your website, where they can, the term morbidly adorable came up mm-hmm. in my head as mm-hmm. you were describing some of your work and as we were talking about some of the stuff,
mm-hmm.
Like you were talking about the skeleton dogs and stuff.
Yeah.
And so that brought up in my head your Instagram handle.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just wondering if you could tell the audience a little bit about how they can
yeah.
see your work, how you would like them to see your work.
I am wildly inconsistent about social media, I will tell you, but I do have Instagram. Like you said, I'm morbidly adorable on there. I really didn't, it's very small still because I didn't jump on it when everybody did.
Sure.
There's a whole, I'm going to tell you the weirdest thing people think about me. I don't carry a cell phone. So people are like, what? How do you talk to people? And I'm like, Ouija board? You know, like, I'm like, no, I just, you know, I email, I have a computer at home, I have, you know, phone here.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, I couldn't get on Instagram for years because you had to have a cell phone.
Yeah.
So I was really behind that. And Facebook, I've been on, you know, since pretty much when it came out because people harass you to death to like get on it. So, you know, I do tend to have a lot more interaction with people on Facebook still just because the following's been there for a lot longer.
Sure.
I had time to build up that group. I do have a website. You can go, Facebook, Morbidly Adorable Art.
Okay.
Because I wasn't smart enough to grab my handle back in the day. I just had my name, right? And then when I started a page, I was like, oh, somebody took my art name. Because I have been under Morbidly Adorable since 2004, I think.
Oh, wow.
But I just didn't understand the whole, like, grab your name. So I didn't.
Sure.
Like,
who
so
did?
It's, I'm all over the place. Sometimes I'm Morbidly Adorable. Sometimes I'm Morbidly Adorable Art. My website is, you can go under morbidlyadorable.com or mistymonster.com. They all redirect there. It has been a whole thing. I need a manager for the website, right? It's one of those things where I have broken it so many times. Well, I built my own back in the day, like when HTML was still mm-hmm. like relevant. And then, but I'm not a computer person. So when it kept transitioning and you needed to go to WordPress or whatever, I have just been so lost that sometimes I'll get it looking great and then I'll break something. I'll lose it. And I'm kind of at that phase right now where I'm like under construction, but it's one of my goals is to do it maybe in the next couple months after this deck is finally in publication, like priorities. You
sure,
know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I am out there social media wise. I have been underground for a lot of years on actually physically showing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd say back in 2000, 8, 9, 10, 11. I used to do like San Diego Comic-Con and Dragon Con in Atlanta, and I would go to Oregon and Pennsylvania, and I did the circuit. I showed here, Hyde Park Street Fair and Ample Festival of the Arts, you know, whatever just seemed like it'd be fun to do. And I did that for maybe 3, 4, 5 years. Like, that was my primary thing, you know, do that, social media. And I just decided I don't want to be a road dog. I just don't.
It's a hard life, for sure.
It is. And going and staying in, you know, Comic-Con, you're like, oh my gosh, you must have done so well. I did, but I also had to get a hotel for a week, and, you know, I had to
spend
travel. And yeah, so it just is so hard if you don't live there. So I kind of, after that, like, kind of pulled back a little bit. And we don't have a huge gallery scene for specific kinds of arts here. So honestly, I think the last gallery I even remember that, because I did show in it. I don't, were you here? Well, you were here, but did you remember the Basement Gallery at all? They showed more like lowbrow, pop surrealism. You know, they were, but they're not here anymore, sure. Right? So that was kind of it. And then, like, I haven't done anything for a while, and I've slowly been going back out into public. Like, you know, like, I mean, even the Record Exchange was really good. Like, they used to have these auctions called the money auctions, where you convert those plastic dolls into your own thing.
Oh, okay.
And then they would auction them off for charity. And it's funny, because I recently, so this is another thing I realized about artists. I was in an auction show with all these artists back then, and I never met any of them, right? Mm. Like, maybe I'd show up to the thing, but I didn't know who they were when I got there. Nobody facilitated and said, hey, Misty, this is so-and-so, right? And so, like, recently, Noble Hardesty, I was like, hey, I just want to say we were in those money auctions together back in the day, and I think what you're doing is cool, and I see your art all over the place, but I've never reached out. I just want to say I love what you're doing. And he's like, oh, hey, yeah, I've really admired your art for a while now too. And he said, I gave a Big Eye art book to my niece and you're in it. She's learning about you. I'm like, how have we not talked in 15 years? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, we just have these circles, but we don't. So I've challenged myself this year. Oh, and I took improv for 8 weeks to make myself like just be better at doing this stuff. So now I'm kind of challenging myself to like reach out to people, say hi. You know, if we're talking about art, go, oh, I'm an artist. In the past, I would just listen to people talk about it and maybe like be in on their conversation, but not put myself into it. So I've been working a lot more at that, and slowly, you know, maybe, you know, that's how I reached out to you. I was like, he says no, big deal, right? What is the worst that can happen here? He's gonna be like, I'm busy, or I've got a list this long. So it's fine. And, you know, like, I have an interview with 100.3 The X and a rock station, you know, to talk about my art, right? Like, why not?
One of the things that I wish I had realized younger is the bar for entry for a lot of stuff is a lot lower than people think.
Just asking.
And yeah, most of the time it's just a matter of saying, hey, can I do this?
Right.
And somebody is probably going to say yes at some point.
Right.
You know?
Take those no's so hard, right? If we hear a no, we're like, oh, okay.
Some of my very early interviews, one of my first ones was with Elms One from Sector 17.
Oh, okay.
And after like I got to his house, he's like, I don't know why I said yes to this, but yeah, let's do it. You know? Because he knew, or he's, Sector 17 is well known. They do a lot of stuff around here, you know, and I'm just at that point, somebody who had like put out one, maybe two videos, you know, so he took a chance on me, and everybody, especially that first year really did. And I had some name recognizable artists that interviewed with me that first year. I had some people that I do a variety, you know, I mean, my biggest thing with this is that I'm trying to expose what's out there. And that's whether it's somebody that's been doing it for 50 years and, you know, they need a resurgence, or they need no recognition, you know, or somebody that has been hiding out, or, you know, whatever.
It's,
it's people that are creating art, and I'm trying to make it so that people know what's being made around here.
Oh, yeah. I will say I am in that place where if it comes to a media type thing, hey, I mean, if Noble wants to hook me up with his niece and she needs a show and tell, I will show up for that show and tell gig. My cousin was telling me, she goes, well, since you're like totally into doing podcasts, she goes, she works for the prison. She goes, would you do a prison podcast? She goes, it's only heard in the prison. I'm just letting you know. I go, A, it'd be good practice. And B, why not? Yeah. Right? Like, they're like art too, right? Like, it's no shame.
Yeah.
I'm kind of in that mode right now where I'm like, if it's something, you know, I mean, I don't want to go set up and vend at events anymore. I've sworn that life off, right? And people have just been trying to get me so hard to come back to it, but I don't want to make stuff. But, you know, something like this where you just get to talk about art and stuff, yeah, I'll show up.
Sure. Well, and I mean, I think that it's just fascinating to, I mean, everybody has a different thought process, mm-hmm. and everybody creates different things, and some stuff doesn't appeal to others, you know,
right.
And that's okay. You know, I've seen very abstract work that, I mean, you know, Jackson Pollock is the famous one with like
go-to.
The dots and stuff, you know? Yeah. But there's people that like that.
Yeah.
One of the really cool artworks, it's very abstract. Michael Norsk, I did a podcast with him. He like builds up dots
of acrylic. Like the pointillism
And he's not making figures with the dots per se, but he's making more, it's almost sculptural with the paint,
oh,
the
okay.
way that the dots
cool.
come up.
Yeah.
It creates a really neat effect, these like blobs of paint.
And, yeah.
But again, they're very abstract as they come out, and where, you know, your work's a lot more figurative, you know, you can, there are definite figures in your work, you know?
Oh yeah. I am very, it's what I love doing. So
yeah, there's a variety. Art is so many things, you know, and art isn't just paintings either. Of course, you know, my second year, I really tried to focus on like 3D artists. That's where I interviewed Lala's Fresh Pots, Kayla Morgan. I interviewed Sawtooth Glass. He's kind of a local guy, does a lot of glassware and stuff, like plateware, glasses, that sort of stuff. All sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm selling him short, but I've always been fascinated by glass stuff.
Yeah.
I've gotten to watch that process a few times now with Zion over at down in Garden City.
Oh, the
Zion Art Glass.
Neon. You did something with the neon.
That's
too,
Will Kirkman.
Right?
Rocket Neon. He's and that was fascinating too, because I've always loved neon, and I got to watch him electrify stuff. It was really
amazing.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, I like the behind the scenes. I like the documentary, and I like, I think other people like that too. And this podcast sort of thing, obviously you lose the visual element of a lot of it, but I think it makes it a little more accessible for some people anyway. You know, they can listen to it while they're working or
Absolutely.
While they're driving a car, where, you know, any more 5 minutes is a long time to ask somebody to sit and watch something.
Yep.
In the world of 1 minute TikToks and I know TikTok nowadays is faster or longer, not faster. But like YouTube, their shorts are limited to 60 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, you got to play inside their windows. And 5 minutes it doesn't sound like a long time, but when you got to just sit and focus
on something.
Keep
someone's attention,
It's a long time.
Especially if, you know, they're like, oh, I get the idea after a minute.
Skip around, whatever. Yep. Attention spans are limited. When you said you've been working on this for 15 years?
Yes, because I would stop for years sometimes and just paint commissions, or I would be doing Comic-Cons or something, you know. And I looked back because I actually kept track of, you know, the years of each one and what order I did them in. Yeah, I didn't realize this till I looked back. I go, there was 3 years in there I didn't paint a single one, you know. And I was like shocked because I thought, oh, I've been working on it the whole time, you know. And then there's some years I looked and I was like, you did 20 that year, right? Like, because that's all I did, you know. And maybe I didn't work at the time, because I do have a, I don't know if we'll segue into that, but I do have a full-time job right now where mm-hmm. I work 50 hours a week, and then this is what I come home and do, you know? So yeah, 15 years. I never well, imagined that when I started. I'm glad I didn't know, because I wonder what I would have said.
Oh, sure.
You know, if that would have been like, I don't know. I've had friends that said they won't even try to do it. They're like, yeah. They're like, I will never finish it.
Well, I think it's interesting, though, that, I mean, that kind of encompasses, I mean, that's, it, you know, on some scales, that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's a good portion of a lifetime, you know?
That absolutely.
It covers, you know, yeah. and it could be, art is influenced yeah. by the creator. So there's going to be, like you say, parts of what you were experiencing at that mm-hmm. time. And it can be an interesting catalog. That's a really
yeah
neat thing. I hadn't realized quite or thought of the scale and the implications right. of that.
A friend of mine, she arranges like artist trips and stuff. Like I've went to India with her before, and I went to a sculpture class. This woman was telling me, she goes, I just want to say, because I said, I'm really sick about how long this is taking me. She goes, you might be in service to this project the rest of your life. And I was like, no, 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 no. Like I was thinking more literally, like, what if it takes me the rest of my life to do this? Like, I don't want to die with this project undone. But she was more saying like, maybe you'll be in service to working with tarot in some form, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I get it now. Like I'm looking back, like even as this is completed, I still want to do this huge gallery show. I want to do this huge deck launch. Like it is taking me this long, but it's going to also launch my career in a different way sure. than I had before. So I'm kind of like, I get why it took so long to get here. Like I probably wasn't ready before this point, you know, for everything that was going to come with it.
Yeah. Well, you know? And there's so much, you know, one of my favorite phrases is you don't know what you don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, there's a lot of stuff that when I dipped my toe into freelancing, mm-hmm. I learned a whole world of things that I didn't know. I learned about insurances
yes,
and like different costs and how you can itemize different pieces and how you can't. All of it that's like, I didn't know it was going to be this complicated.
I just want the fun part. Come on. Like.
And so, until you do it,
right.
you know, and that's until you make those mistakes, you know, mm-hmm. you don't know what you need to know or right. or what it could be, what it takes.
Like painting on flat canvas versus stretched canvas, right?
Sure. And that, like, you know, if you start doing that, you right. know, maybe you don't think that
right.
down the road you wanted the gallery show.
And yeah, I didn't. I wanted to sell them all. That's how mm-hmm. I went into it. I never thought something this big would be attainable. So yeah, I went into it thinking, well, I'm going to sell each painting, and I know a lot won't sell up front. They'll sell when the deck comes out. I'll make some money off it. And I did sell two. I find that a mistake now. Fortunately, I know who has them, so I could, you know, call them back for the show, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, things like that. And now I'm like, it's hard for me to want to do gallery shows because they're like, they want you to sell your paintings. And I'm like, oh, no, I got bigger plans. Like, I'd like to see this. If it goes well, travel, you know, like maybe somebody else would want to show it somewhere. So yeah, no, I've learned my little weird mistakes that way too. Like I would have never thought, oh, why'd you sell that? You know, that's sure. been the goal all these years to sell things.
Yeah. There's an artist that I spoke with for my day job. Mm-hmm. I spoke with Fred Choate, and there was a piece that he made that had he put a little bit of a personal touch in it.
Mm-hmm.
And he had told me, he's like, oh yeah, you know, I sold it. I sell paintings. I kind of wish I had held on to it for a little bit
yeah.
longer. You know? And I went out to a show that it was first Thursday.
Yeah.
But he had a show at Delia Dante's gallery, Fire Fusion Studio.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the street name, but it's very obvious where it is down there, just downtown. And, but he was there and I noticed that he had that painting. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was
loaned it back to him or like,
yeah, I don't know if he got back in touch with the buyer and had it put up or if he had said that he might try to recreate it, you know?
Oh,
so I don't know if he did that. So But it was like, oh,
there's a mystery out there now.
But when I saw it, I was like, ah, yeah, that piece. I'm like, I know that one.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, though.
And that's, like I said, I love knowing the behind the scenes of stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm, part of why I do this, you know, because it's fun. You know, you get those stories, the extended stories that are behind these pieces. Like what you're doing, why you're doing it. You know, what your inspiration is for creating this, you know, because not everybody is going to take on a project that is going to take a long time.
Yeah, I looked at it. I'm like, why not? Why wouldn't you do this if you had the opportunity? And now I'm like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
You had the foresight to go like, I know myself, you know.
Well, and, you know, you mentioned earlier about being, you know, working, you know, mm-hmm. That you have a day job.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, the majority of artists do. It's,
yeah,
it's more the exception that people are out there,
right,
making a living with their art. Definitely people that do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard
awesome.
Job.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. They hustle constantly. Yeah. I used to think that when I would see people online, I was like, oh, for sure, they're making money with their art. And then I'd find, oh, they're teaching at a university,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, they have, I have some friends that can do it, but there's, you know, a significant other that's paying, you know, the mortgage or whatever. And so they can afford to, like, this is our vacation money, you know? So, and that's awesome. That's great. But yeah, I'm just not at that place. And I say yet, because I feel like the tarot is a breakthrough.
Well,
you know?
You said maybe it's going to be or you're hoping for it to be a launching point to say, hey,
right.
Here's.
Well, yes. I met somebody who, so at that event where I met the tarot company, it was actually another artist that had just had his deck released that pointed my art out to them. And he has a tarot deck called Deviant Moon Tarot, and his name's Patrick Valenza. And he was the one saying, hey, I really like her art. Maybe you should talk to her. Which is funny because I saw his art on the banner and I was like, I need to meet this guy because that is the coolest deck I've seen in a long time, right? So there was kind of like this mutual like, hey, you're cool. And so when I met them, I told him, I said, hey, I've been making prints at shows and stuff like that for a long time. If you want any information on doing that, you know, like hit me up. Like I can kind of give you some a starting point, right, if you want to do that. And we kind of talked, and he said, I asked him with the tarot, because I had somebody approach me online, and they said, I want to buy the rights to your tarot. So I'd already contracted with US Games, but that is a royalty thing after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And they give you like a small thing up front, just as a like, hey, we're invested, cool, you know.
Yeah.
But it's nothing, right? Like in the end of the day, it's just a drop. But this person showed up and said, if I give $30,000 now and you relinquish the rights to the deck, right? Like you get no royalties, you know, would you consider that offer, right? And I was like, first off, I'm like, someone wants to give me $30,000. And this was like, you know, 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
right? So I'm like, that's like, that could be a whole year of my income, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the time. So I talked to Patrick about it. I'm like, what do you think about this? I'm like, obviously I don't want to leave US Games, but I'm like, this is like money to get this done maybe, you know? And he was like, don't do it. He goes, you will get back that in a couple years because I think your deck's going to be bigger than mine was. He's like, I just have so much faith that this will change your life, right? And so I hold on to that
sure.
for years, being like, okay, you know, I mean, there's a part of me that also knows things, you never know how it's going to work out. You know, I'm not setting it up to be like, oh, the world's over if it doesn't work out. But I have just seen the groundswell of support happening as people are seeing, now that I'm telling them, right? Before mm-hmm. I wasn't telling anybody. But now that I'm kind of like, hey, I'm working on these 78 paintings. People are like, 78 paintings, right? A tarot deck. You know, people are showing up now in ways, you know, like Crohn's Cupboard, like, come read tarot. You know, we'll send out an email list. We want to support you on this. You know, like, you're doing interviews on a radio. Boise Weekly ran an article, right? Like, it's just been super supportive. And I really thought they would all say no, to be honest, because people tend to want to wait till the event so they could talk about the event.
Yeah.
But this is people saying, no, we kind of want to be at the point before the event also. Like, we want to support you now. Yeah. And that's been so amazing.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, if, not saying that it's going to happen because I don't think it's ever happened, but like if somebody were to hear this interview mm-hmm. and decide, hey, yeah, I want to support that, you yeah. know, I hope that happens, you know,
absolutely.
Like I said,
I
don't think it's, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I don't think it ever has happened. Mm-hmm. Maybe it will.
There's a first time for everything.
Absolutely.
And I'll be the first to let you know.
But you know, yeah, I hope that yeah. people get exposed to artists and find them and start supporting them. You know, it's, if somebody likes what somebody's doing, you know, mm-hmm. it, for me, even just hearing somebody sometimes say, you know, like, hey, I like what you're doing,
right.
you know, it,
yeah.
it can keep me going, mm-hmm. you know, because sometimes it does get discouraging if you're, you know, creating and it's not getting the exposure that you think it
right.
should, you know,
yeah.
I mean, a project like this, that's a long term, you know, it's going to take a while before mm-hmm. it gets a payback of that
oh,
exposure.
Yeah. I have had people reach out to me over the years. They're like, are you done with your deck yet? I really want to teach my daughter to read tarot. And I would love your deck to be the first. And now I'm like, fast forward 15 years. I'm like, oh gosh, their daughter's an adult now.
So you know, you do work, but you mm-hmm. have your dedicated space to create here.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it to you to be able to have a space that you don't have to tear down? You know, you were creating in your living room,
mm-hmm.
and that's not an uncommon thing for many artists, you know, especially with the cost of property in
right.
Boise right now. You know, I think most people are working out of their home.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got a dedicated space. You know, this is, you've sacrificed to make it, obviously,
mm-hmm.
but how important is it to you to have this spot where you can come and set up your stuff and work and then, you know, go to sleep and not tear it down, you know, not
right.
worry about that? How important has that been to your ability to create?
Well, as you can see, I have sacrificed. I do not have a couch. I do not have a traditional living room on any stretch. The only time I sometimes don't like that because people want to come over and hang out. And I'm like, well, I got some computer chairs and a stool like we're doing now, right?
Sure.
And they're like, I don't care. Like, I'll just sit on the wall. Like, so people are really supportive of it, which is nice. It is huge. If I had to pack this up every night, you know, or put things away, it means just there'd be a delay on a day where I don't feel like doing it as much, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I would go, oh, I don't know, maybe not tonight, I'm tired. Whereas if it's always kind of in my face, I can maybe sit down for an hour if it's been a hard day or whatever. So it's really, I've never had a studio space. Like, we were kind of talking earlier about, you know, the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
And Alexa Rose, you know, doing an artist residency,
yeah.
like a show and tell. And so when I went there and I actually would talk to artists, like Brecken Bird has a space upstairs. And I was like, how is this for you? You know? She goes, I feel like I've gotten out and I'm meeting people.
Right?
Like, I'm not doing it inside. So there's a part of me that's curious about that world.
Yeah.
You know, what is the world where I get to see other artists create? I talk to other artists. So I am excited. But there's a little part of me that's like, how hard is it going to be for me to leave my apartment and go use? I mean, if I'm
sure.
being offered an opportunity like that, if
yeah.
I can get that grant, I will not squander it even a bit. But I used to think about, like, what if I rented a studio? I'm like, I don't, would it be, it's like getting a gym membership. Am I going to
yeah.
use it or not?
You know? I mean, myself,
yeah.
There's been various co-working spaces and office spaces and stuff that I've looked at throughout
right.
the years. And I just can't ever justify the cost to myself because
right.
on the one hand, sure, it would only be a few $100s and then it's advertising, it's networking,
mm-hmm.
it's having a location that people, even if I'm not there, you know, they'll see the name tag or whatever, you
mm-hmm.
know. So there is that, and it's a marketing advertising sort of thing. But also I'm like, this project, you know, unless I can get a sponsorship, but.
hey, that's okay. We're going to sail.
This is the episode.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, I've never been able to justify that cost to
right.
myself. There, you know, if I was going to pay money, I would pay Katie Kloppenberg, my friend who mm-hmm. does the social media for this.
Right.
You know, I would pay her before mm-hmm. I would buy my, you know, an office space.
Something you're doing already in your own space. Yeah. But
I recently was looking at the cost of having somebody else edit these because mm-hmm. my day job is not very far off from this. I mean, I do video, but coming home and editing
more.
Something is still right. hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to go from work to work. So I was looking at the cost of doing that and online, I could find somebody to do it for $40, which mm-hmm. is ridiculously cheap. Nobody should be working for that price.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, even that, I'm like, for $40, I can suck it up.
You're
and
still
edit it myself.
Like, yeah, you're still in it, right? You know, so this is kind of a side thing, but I was actually reading. This goes back to the whole working full time, you know, and trying to do your craft. And this is going to be like the economy, like. But I was reading like a thread on Twitter about people talking about how artists used to be able to support themselves on a part-time job. And I know this because I was kind of there at one point, but they were saying, you know, you could work a seasonal job and then spend the rest of the year doing your art because rent was just so different back then, right? And I think, so I'm, you know, older than you, and it was about like, it was like mid 90s, late 90s, I remember. I had a studio apartment for $250 a month
mm.
and I was making $10 an hour, right? So it was me and my boyfriend and I worked 20 hours a week. He didn't have a job at the time. We made all our rent, everything we needed, and one of us was working part-time and we both were going to community college. Right. We made all that happen. And so when people are like, I don't believe this, I'm like, no, really. I'm like, this happened. So I just think, gosh, if I were an artist and had that level of, I just need to work 20 hours a week. And then when I was like sick of working, he'd go work 20 hours a week. Right. Like we could sure. just switch it. Right. But it like worked so well. So I just think, oh, if we could just have it where we could afford to like, you know, like even right now I do my last job, the job I'm currently at. I said, I can't believe you guys hired me, to be honest. I've never had a hard time getting a job. I said, but I know you've looked at my resume and gone like, oh, why do you only stay 3 or 4 years at a job? And I'm like, because I save up, I quit, I do art for a couple of years if I can get away with it, right?
Yeah.
And
that's cool.
My current boss is like, no, I love that. Like, I'm totally fine. As long as we keep you invested, we know we'll get 3 or 4 years out of you.
You know, I think that there's something to be said, you know, mm-hmm. it's not an uncommon thing that people hop around to different things, you know,
right.
and to have what you enjoy doing and what you want to do be your goal, you know, doing the means to an end mm-hmm. work, you know, it's okay, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I know a lot of people in this area who work in indie film.
Mm-hmm.
I can probably count on one hand the number of them who make a living at it, and that's their day job, you know?
So rough. Yeah.
But they still go out there and they still do it, and they work the day job mm-hmm. so they can have the money to do the fun job.
Right.
And I mean, yeah, ideally we'd all get paid for our creative endeavors. But
well, that was kind of the thing that was, I mean, we all go back to like, oh, Michelangelo, he had, you know, patrons, you know, that's how he did his art. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, but that time is so far gone. I'm like, but I lived in an era where, you know, you could afford to kind of do what you wanted to do. But a lot of the thread was like, do you realize that we have these artists because, you know, they could afford to be artists? Like what if we lost, right? Like, if they had actually, people had been able to really do what they wanted to do, you know? So it's just, it's an interesting, like, intellectual, you know,
yeah.
exercise to think about it.
Well, and I'm not a history buff, so mm-hmm. I'm not gonna say I know it, but whichever president it was during the Great Depression, you know, mm-hmm. part of the jobs that they funded, that the government created,
art?
Were art.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, that because
they saw the importance.
Yeah.
That's so
amazing. It was like paying
yeah.
for signs to be painted. Mm-hmm. You know, it was that realization, that determination that everybody needs a job, everybody needs mm-hmm. something to do, and artists are somebody too. You know?
Right.
So, yeah, like I said, it might have been painting a sign, but mm-hmm. it was something. It might have been utilitarian, but it was something.
Right. No, I love that. That's pretty amazing.
Like I said, I'm not a history buff, right. So it whatever. It was part of that New Deal or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I know we have things that support us, you know, and you know we can get grants from Alexa Rose or things like that, but they're just very project specific, mm-hmm. and they're always just to kind of help give you a boost, you know. It's a little harder to get like a full, I just want you to quit your job and paint for a year and I'm going to sponsor that, you know.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean that's what's really neat to me with these the residency that they're offering now, right. with that Commonwealth, mm-hmm. And then Alexa Rose, it's really neat to be, because it's a space, you know. Mm-hmm. They're not giving a lot of monetary. They're right. giving enough that you could buy some supplies for your residency.
Right.
But the value is in that space and having it that where the community can come in and see
right.
it. And, you know, I wouldn't, you know, I don't have the money, like I said earlier, to mm-hmm. throw out a space. But if somebody wants to give me a space,
sure.
I wanted to also ask, do you think that art is something that you will ever stop doing?
No. I mean, I have had dark nights of the soul about this for sure, where I thought, what if I do this, I finish this project, like you said, that's been would be a large part of anybody's life, and it just fizzles out. Like nothing came of it, right? I would still be proud I did this. I would love all my paintings. But what if I put all this in? And then it's just like, well, what next? You know, like nobody paid attention. The decks didn't sell. I got no world, right, whatever. Would I be like, yeah, I'm just done? You know, I have thought about it. And I think there was a time where I was like, I don't know, maybe I wouldn't. I'd just like save money and travel, right? Like do something else. But I don't think I can quit. Like I just, that's just me being dramatic. You know?
Well, no, I mean,
you know, I know there's people that have packed it in over stuff like that, where they're
sure.
just like, the movie didn't work out or whatever. And they're just like, I am done. It was too traumatizing. But I think that even if I might scale it down, you know, like do a 5 inch by 7 inch painting of a single character or something, you know, like maybe do something more light and fun. But I don't know. I just have this feeling, this is where I'm supposed to be going with this, right? Like this is the thing that'll bring together what I need to happen. And yeah, I would love to make this full time. You know, I realize that it's going to be a lot harder because I'm not a freelance to hire kind of
sure.
person where, you know, it's like you want a logo, I'll make that logo. I'm more of a, you come to me for what I do
mm-hmm.
and we're going to work together on what I do. So yeah, I know it's going to be a struggle, but yeah, I don't think I would quit.
I think in the end, it makes it more satisfied customer if they're coming to you because they like what you're creating mm-hmm. versus wanting you to, I don't know. I mean, when people commission, I mean, obviously
yeah.
they do, you know, ask or give direction to what it is. And I mean, even with your tarot series, there's... Mm-hmm. the cards themselves are going to give you some direction to what you're going to do with those paintings.
Right.
But yeah, I think that you get happier commissioners or mm-hmm. when you come to them, like my leg tattoo is one that I went to the artist
yeah.
and it's done by Darcy Nutt.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I want you to tattoo something on me.
Oh, awesome.
You know,
yeah.
and it's
she was
like,
probably like, I love that.
And so it's like, I want it to be what you think this should be. And like, we talked, we got some
yeah.
ideas and all that. And my wife's got a beautiful piece on her back from her as well.
Mm-hmm.
We got them at the same time. But, you know, it was like, I want your work. I'm not picky about,
yeah.
I mean, I want what I want, but
mm-hmm.
I'm not like, oh, I want it to be this and it's got to look this way. It's like, you're
yeah.
the artist. You do this.
I've done a surprising amount of commissions where, I mean, I even have one, my job. I went to them when I was like, hey, I'm doing this tarot project, 78 paintings. I'm going to hang it in the Water's Edge Gallery in Riverside. We're going to do a whole opening night. You know, I made myself pitch to my own job mm-hmm. what I would pitch to a sponsor for this, which was super hard because I have to see these people every day.
Yeah.
And my boss was like, well, he goes, it's not, you know, a 501c. It's not, you know, and, you know, it's not really, can't really do advertising because not everybody's going to agree on tarot being, you know, for the job. He goes, but can we commission you for a painting? Right. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I have time for this, but I want to kickstart this project. I want some sense of somebody saying yes, right? So I took on this commission, and they've been very much like, well, we want our logo, but we want it in your style, whatever you do, whatever, right? And they just kind of walked away from it, like, you know, just, I mean, let us see it, obviously. And in the past, yeah, I've done an awful lot of paintings where basically it's like, I like your style, and I'm like, okay. And they're like, just do whatever. And I'm like, okay, well, I just want some direction. Like, are you into, what are you into? Do you like books? Do you like this? Right? Like, what elements do I bring in? But surprisingly, people just, they are very easy. Some people are very easy. They just love art, and something you did is enough, you know?
I've definitely had the people that go, make me a video, you know?
Yeah. Just, and you're what?
Yeah. And it's like, well, what do you want? Yeah. Just, you can figure it out.
That's so cool that it translates to that too.
But the frustration translates as well, where you're like, can you give me a little more?
Yeah. I'm like, give me three things you're into, right? Let's start somewhere.
So one more time, can I have you tell me where people can find your work online?
My website, either mistymonster.com. It's the easiest thing to remember, Misty Monster, or Morbidly Adorable. They all direct there. Predominantly, I'm just keeping up at this point with Instagram and Facebook, you know, so.
And what are the handles on there?
Instagram, Morbidly Adorable, and Facebook, Morbidly Adorable Art.
Okay, excellent.
So, yeah.
I just want to make sure that people can find your work, you know. I'll have links in the description here as well, but I want to make sure that they can look it up if they're just listening, you know. So do you have any questions for me, or is there anything that you wanted to talk about that I haven't asked you about?
I wish I had been keeping track. Like,
it's been a wide ranging, long conversation for sure.
Yeah. I think we've talked about so much. Like, I wish I had something. As soon as you leave, I'll think of it.
Well, that's perfect. Well, Misty Monster, thank you so much for joining me on the Boise Art Scene podcast.
Yeah.
I appreciate your time. I appreciate hearing about your work and your project. And I'll look forward to what comes next with it. And thank you all for listening on the Boise Art Scene podcast. Thanks for joining me on here. And we will catch you on the next one. And if you are interested in becoming a sponsor, feel free to reach out at info@boiseartscene.com. That goes directly to me, and I'll eventually answer it probably. Thank you. Have a great one.